It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A growing body of research highlights the strong connections between our brain and our digestive system.
The crosstalk occurring between the gut microbiome and the brain has important implications for everything from treating addiction to managing autoimmune diseases.
Researchers are discovering gut microbes have a role in our behavior, in our personality traits, and in the development of some mental illnesses.
To learn about the research, we turn to Vanessa Spirandio, a professor and chair of the Medical Microbiology and Immunology Department at UW-Madison. Vanessa, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you.
Let's look more closely at the gut-brain connection before we unpack your research. What can you tell us about this highway, if you will, between the brain and our gastrointestinal system?
So your brain is connected to the enteric nervous system through the vagal nerve, and the enteric nervous system has a lot of nerves in there and makes a lot of neurotransmitters that are put together into the gut where bacteria live. And you have this very dense microbiota in there, very rich in different species of bacteria that also produce several metabolites and signals that in turn are sensed through the enteric nervous system and can go all the way to the brain and alter behaviors, impact neurodegenerative diseases, and also addiction behaviors, amongst other things.
So what I'm hearing is that the gut and the brain have this crosstalk going. Can the gut act independently without the brain saying, hey, do this? Or are these signals from the brain giving orders to the gut? What is the hierarchy like?
So they are interconnected because the signals from the brain are basically controlling intestinal motility. They're controlling your immune responses in the gut. And they are also controlling chloride and potassium secretion and homeostasis in general. And on the other side, the bacterial signals can travel to the brain and also impact different behaviors. And we're starting to understand, because this is a nascent field in biology.
Starting to understand, why is it so important to understand the gut-brain connection here and this gut-brain access? What might it unlock?
So there are several things that it can unlock. For example, we now understand that bacteria, including bacterial pathogens, can actually sense neurotransmitters, things like adrenaline, serotonin, endocannabinoids, and they can either enhance or decrease the virulence of these bacterial enteric pathogens. So we can actually adapt some agonists and antagonists of these neurotransmitters, for example, that are already used in the clinic for other things to try to use as therapeutics against enteric infections. One such example would be serotonin. Serotonin decreases bacterial virulence. The other example would be that several members of your microbiota, they can actually impact your behaviors. For example, if you have an expansion of E. coli, E. coli is part of your commensal microbiota, but usually it's a very small amount of E. coli that you have. If that population expands, okay, it starts to use an amino acid that you have called glycine in the intestine. And glycine actually prevents people from becoming addicted to cocaine. And if you have an expansion of E. coli, the levels of glycine go down and you enhance, for example, cocaine addiction behaviors, cocaine-seeking behaviors, cocaine administration behaviors. You make things worse. And you can think about ways now in which you can correct that, because you can actually correct that by giving glycine back, or even sarcosine. Sarcosine is a precursor for glycine, and it's a food supplement. You can just go to GNC. It's used by many athletes.
It's so interesting how you can apply this to substance use disorders, which so many Americans are struggling with. But when you think of these substances, whether it's an opioid or something else, they can kind of hijack the brain's reward center, you know, triggering those feelings of pleasure. How could that be counteracted with gut microbes?
Yes. In the case of psychoactive drugs, they act through this pathway that's activated by glycine in the gut, in the brain. And when you use cocaine, you increase the levels of adrenaline in the brain and also in the gut. And this adrenaline drives the expansion of E. coli. And E. coli starts using a lot of glycine, and then it becomes kind of a feedback mechanism in which you become more addicted. You have pharmacological interventions for alcoholism and also opioid addiction, but you have none for psychoactive drugs such as methamphetamine and cocaine. So this could be one way in which, you know, it's one mechanism, and we can actually hopefully find other mechanisms too.
This also could have applications for infectious diseases. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so for in the case of infectious diseases, for example, if you increase the levels of serotonin in the gut, you have a protective effect against infections such as E. coli, Salmonella, which are some of the most prevalent gastrointestinal pathogens. And you, for example, you can do that by giving a lot of serotonin, or you can do that by using Prozac. If you inhibit the reuptake of serotonin and increase accumulation in the intestine, which is what one of the things that Prozac does, it becomes protective against enteric infections. So you could have like a double use of something that's already FDA approved.
Hmm. So as we continue to learn more about the gut microbiome and addiction, how do you see this changing the pharmaceutical industry and changing treatment?
So first of all, it could facilitate the development of antimicrobials at large. Usually the pharmaceutical industry is a little recalcitrant on developing novel antibiotics because most of the times, by the time they're finishing developing antibiotic, resistance already occurred, and that becomes something complicated and super expensive. But targeting systems like this one, for example, the serotonin-based system, you're not killing any of these pathogens, you're just disarming them. And then your immune system takes care of it. So it's a little more gentle. It's kind of like not going with a hammer, but going with a scalp.
Mm, yeah, that makes sense. This is such an exciting research area. Things are changing here. And I'm just wondering, you know, your research into the gut microbiome, it is funded in part by the NIH, and medical researchers at the NIH are really concerned about funding and whether their research might be impacted. Do you have concerns at this point?
I think everybody at this point has concerns because we are completely dependent on NIH. The vast majority of us, like over 95% of investigators in this area, they are completely dependent on NIH. So if the funding disappears, the possibility of developing new treatments will also go with it.
And so you are just kind of watching day to day as to what unfolds?
Yes, because what I think the general public needs to understand is that it's not just paying for the research, but it's paying for the researchers, the people who are actually spending, you know, 60 hours a week working, trying to discover how nature works and how these relationships that we have with microbes and disease work, so we can actually develop and translate this information into something that's going to help the health and improve the life of the general population.
Vanessa, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Vanessa Spirandio is a professor and chair of the Medical Microbiology and Immunology Department at UW-Madison. She talked with us about her research on substance abuse disorder in the gut microbiome. Next, we'll look at another scientist's work on gut bacteria, specifically how the ketogenic diet can affect gut health. Maggie Alexander is an assistant professor of medical microbiology and immunology at UW-Madison. Maggie, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Given what a huge influence gut bacteria has on our nervous systems, I mean, it really follows into what we eat, into what we're thinking about behavior. Can you tell us about your research and your discoveries and what you're looking into?
Absolutely. Yeah. So our research is really focused on trying to understand the mechanisms of the interactions between what we eat and our diets, our gut microbiota, and the immune responses. And we're right now particularly interested in this in the context of autoimmune diseases. One of the ways that we think about this is, you know, trying to understand microbes that are associated with disease states, so associated with autoimmunity. So let's say we have a microbe that's increased in abundance in an autoimmune state like inflammatory bowel disease. Our question is, can we understand how that microbe is impacting immune responses? And then use our understanding of how that is working to sort of come in with more targeted interventions. And in particular, thinking about, can we use diet to sort of manipulate this interaction between disease-associated microbe and the immune response that's kind of driving disease?
That's so interesting because, you know, we are so much in control of what we eat and diet and how that could actually influence these diseases, that has huge repercussions.
Yeah, I think of it as, you know, it's sort of a more more attainable thing to try and do. And, you know, we're trying to understand how these interactions work so we can more understand, you know, how those sort of interactions might be able to be leveraged more in order to get sort of the responses that you're wanting to see in your, you know, autoimmune conditions. Yeah. And then we have sort of another way of thinking about this is sort of more from, you know, the diet perspective of, you know, people that are trying to shape your diet to impact positively a disease state that you have. And so there's really interesting sort of clinical trial data and as well as sort of these dietary recommendations. But one of the problems, I think, is that we don't really understand fully the mechanisms of how our diets are impacting our microbiota and the immune response associated with that. And so one of our goals is to try and understand more about how diet is actually impacting the microbiota and impacting how the microbes are talking to the immune system.
Have you looked at particular diets that affect the gut and potentially these diseases?
Yeah, so we're looking at a really fascinating case study right now, which is a ketogenic diet and multiple sclerosis. And so in the literature, there's been some really interesting previous work that's seen a protective effect of a ketogenic diet in clinical trials in a particular autoimmune condition, which is multiple sclerosis. And so one of our goals is try and understand how this is happening, because it wasn't really clear fully how a ketogenic diet could have a general protective effect in this autoimmune condition of multiple sclerosis. And so that's one of the things that we're working on right now, is trying to understand, you know, what is happening on the host side in response to this diet, as well as microbiota dependent mechanisms of this. And so, for example, what we've seen so far is that during a ketogenic diet, you have this sort of switch in host metabolism into making ketone bodies like beta hydroxybutyrate. And we've seen that this production of beta hydroxybutyrate is actually able to sort of recapitulate these protective effects of the full ketogenic diet in our mouse models of multiple sclerosis. So that's really exciting to see. Just, you know, one of the things that changes during this diet can mediate that effect. And so that's helping us get more into really the mechanisms of how this diet can change the host metabolism to think about, you know, more specific ways that this is impacting disease states. And then we can think about how that's impacting the microbiota side, because what's really interesting from the microbiota perspective is that there's been this really strong connection of microbiota and autoimmune conditions, where if you transplant a microbiota that's shaped by an autoimmune condition like multiple sclerosis into mouse models of disease, that leads to worse disease severity in these mouse models. And so there's really this strong sort of connection between that disrupted microbial composition and leading to differences in these disease outcomes. And so that's what we've been looking into in terms of the ketogenic diet and protective effect in multiple sclerosis, what microbiota mechanisms are involved in this as well.
Can you describe just a bit what a keto diet is like? And are there particular foods that might be triggering these things?
Yeah, so a ketogenic diet is a really fascinating diet. It was originally developed to sort of mimic a fasting state. And so basically what it's doing is severely restricting the carbohydrate intake and usually increasing the amount of fat. And the idea behind this is to sort of switch the host metabolism from breaking down carbohydrates as an energy source into switching to breaking down free fatty acids. And so there's many ways to sort of do this, but in general, the ways to do this is you know, trying to restrict carbohydrate heavy foods and usually increasing the intake of more fatty foods. But you can see how that, you know, increasing a lot of fat intake might have negative impacts on certain conditions, especially like heart conditions. And so this is part of our motivation in trying to understand more about, okay, what is actually beneficial about this change, and can we sort of get away from the other impacts that might actually have detrimental effects on people's health?
There is also some emerging research that finds that the keto diet may help with severe mental illness, including schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. What is it about ketosis that seems to have such a strong effect on the brain?
Yeah, so I think there's been really exciting research on this area too, and including mental illness and as well as Alzheimer's here at UW-Madison. People are working on this, thinking about how this change in ketogenesis might impact these brain states. And this is, you know, these ketone bodies are thought to be a fuel for the brain, but I think we're still really trying to understand exactly how these changes are mediating the effects that are seen in these sort of pilot clinical trials.
There are so many variables at play as you lay this out. And so as our understanding of the gut microbiome continues to evolve and scientists make more of these connections, do you see this playing a role in how we end up treating disease in the future and what is prescribed?
Absolutely. I think this is something that, you know, I think people are starting to consider, both thinking about in terms of designing clinical trials, considering the background microbiota composition, even the background diet composition of people that are participating in these clinical trials. This is starting to become more and more appreciated that because these things have effects on disease states, that it's really important to consider these factors when thinking about the efficacy of new pharmaceuticals that are coming out or new interventions that are becoming appreciated. And so I think as we gain more and more information, we're going to be able to more readily understand thinking about, you know, why, when we need to consider sort of the microbiota and diet and looking at these particular responses. And one of the things I'm really interested in is, you know, can we use, you know, some of these things like a microbiota composition to be able to predict maybe a response to a dietary intervention or a response to a pharmacological intervention. And so I think this is sort of a really exciting time to be thinking about these things.
Maggie, thank you for sharing your research.
Thank you so much.
Maggie Alexander is an assistant professor of medical microbiology and immunology at UW-Madison. And earlier, we spoke with Professor Vanessa Spirindio, who chairs this department. We've been learning about the latest research into the gut-brain connection.